Hello and welcome to Fueling Around with me, Jason Plato, and the crease in my catsuit, it's Dave Vitti.
Fueling Around is powered by Adrian Flux. As the UK's largest specialist insurance broker, Adrian Flux will tailor a quote to your exact needs and help save you money on your car, your bike, or even your home insurance.
Now, don't forget to press subscribe on YouTube so that you never miss an episode, or press the follow button on Apple or Spotify or wherever you get your podcast from. David, how are we?
I'm very good, thank you. I feel a little bit giddy today, but I think that's because the sun is shining and we're officially into the summer season, which you can tell by your very bright and vibrant T-shirt, Mr. Plato. Summery.
Well, it's just pink.
Yeah, but it's not. It's like a peachy
that's
pink.
Salmon, isn't
Hang
it?
On, Justin Hawkins. We haven't introduced you yet. You're our secret surprise guest.
Oh, sorry. Oh, wait.
Yeah, do you know what? It's great, isn't it? Sun's out, shorts are on.
Absolutely.
Dodgy T-shirts are out the cupboard.
Sun's out, fun's out. I mean, yeah. You know, and it doesn't get better than that. And I think that our special guest today is somebody who will appreciate good weather, amongst other things.
Well, let's find out, shall we? Our special guest today is quite simply a rock and roll legend. Many would describe him as the shining light in the darkness and a gentleman who truly believes in a thing called love. It is, of course, the one and only Mr. Justin Hawkins. Justin, how are you?
Oh, I'm really good. I'm sorry I kept butting in earlier.
It's fine.
I had to acknowledge the colour of the shade of Jason's T-shirt.
Thank you for joining us from your home in Switzerland. How long have you been living over there and what made you want to settle there other than the chocolate, the cleanliness and the timekeeping?
I'm fond of all of those things, obviously. The roads are amazing.
Yep.
Which is something that I noticed whilst touring here. Mm-hmm. You know, as soon as you cross the border from any of the surrounding countries, it becomes smoother.
Yeah.
I married a Swiss woman,
okay.
Which was a disaster. But I stayed here because I have a Swiss daughter, which is a triumph.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I'm still here because I'm dadding, basically.
And whereabouts in Switzerland are you? I mean, I know I don't want your postcode, but just sort of.
No, it's all right. I can give you that. It's I'm just about 40 minutes away from Zurich, so it's nice.
Okay.
It's the German bit.
Yeah,
it's all nice, but it's, you know, unfortunately it's the one part of the country where I don't speak the language. I'd have been all right in basically anywhere else. Yeah. But so it's been challenging on that level, but it's nice. I like it. It's really hot in the summer, and then like in the winter, I'm only about an hour and a half away from the best snowboarding place in the world. So it's awesome. It's really great.
Sounds idyllic.
It is, actually.
I've been a couple of times to ski resorts in the summer just to go walking. It's absolutely breathtaking, eh?
I know, it's amazing. And every town that you go to, they have these like walking stroke running paths with outdoor exercise points at them. They really, everyone's healthy, basically. I think you live a long time if you spend your life in Switzerland.
Do you know what? I've seen a few of those videos where lunatics jump off with a wingsuit on their back and skip down the side of a mountain at night.
Yeah, doesn't that look boring?
Oh, no, that looks vaguely acceptable.
How do you stick a landing on that in that costume then? Do you have to aim for a trampoline or something like that? Or what?
I think...
Or a bouncy castle?
If ever a sport suited you, though, Justin, surely it's the wingsuit because, you know, it's not that far away from some of the old stage outfits, surely. You know, it's effectively a cat suit with wings, isn't it?
You're right. In fact, I have had a few cat suits with the requisite winged element. Mm. I think what you're talking about there is the cape, actually, that's attached to the arms.
Yeah.
Because a cape, and here's the distinction between the reason why most superhero movies are wrong. Like a cape is something that goes to the waist.
Yeah.
And if you have a full-length one, like what Superman wears, for example, that's a cloak.
Ah.
It's not the same thing.
It's a subtle difference.
And you can't fly with a cloak. You'd just take off. You'd end up in the stratosphere somewhere.
So, Justin, you just recently performed at the VE Day celebrations in London a couple of weeks ago. How does a booking like that come around? I mean, do they contact you? Do you show interest in them or...?
No, I think here's how it works. I think what happens is you become, it's kind of like the kind of assignment that takes 22 years to achieve, really. You have to write a perennial mega hit that the whole world knows and loves.
Yeah.
You have to not get cancelled. You have to not do anything abhorrent in your personal life that allows you to, you know, allows them to ignore you. Keep touring, become a band with longevity. And then you are the reliable sort of household name, familiar face, national treasure type person that they'll call on in moments like that. And then you get to play for the King, which is cool. I mean, so it's really funny though, because it has like, it actually has, you know, like anything you do in the creative sphere, there's, you know, there's reaction that if you're doing something right, then there's, you know, you polarize people and there's contrasting reaction. So some people have been calling us bootlickers because we played for royalty. You know, it's like, okay. You should have seen the fee. I mean, I'd lick more boots if it means that, you know. And, I mean, it was just fun. Just a really great day out. And you know, we've been on tour. We did an arena tour earlier this year. And we've got more big stuff coming up. So it was kind of like in a little break in between it. So it was just great to see everybody. Mm. Like, we all love each other. It's like, we're not one of those bands that fights or anything. So it's just fun. It's just a good time.
And are there any, I presume, there's complete strict protocols, unlike no other gig, I guess?
It was difficult to figure out what to wear, actually, because I couldn't do my squirrel diving suit for a start, because my nipples would have been exposed, and the King, and certainly not the Queen.
Well, they don't have nipples, do they?
Well, they've never seen them, and they thought it might be a bit shocking if, you know. So I wasn't allowed that. They wanted everything to be sort of 40s inspired, but then again, they said no military, so it became like the parameters that we had to choose our outfits within were really strict, and we went for like something sort of inspired by 40s civilian clothing, you know, post-war almost. I think we nailed it, basically.
I thought you looked great.
We had our stylist Lucy, but she was working really hard and fighting the BBC at every corner. It was hard, but we got there in the end. And also, you're not allowed things like stripes because they strobe on camera and you know, people watching it on old-fashioned TV sometimes, and you just got to be careful with that kind of stuff too.
So listen, you're back on the road, as you just sort of said. The latest album, Dreams on Toast, which you released at the end of March, you're obviously promoting that. Is touring, after all these years, a pleasurable experience, or is it something that you need to do?
Well, I think... I don't know. That's a really tough question. I think touring is like a joy for me. The daily existence of touring is so much fun. I love everybody in our team, and we've really sort of honed it now so that it's just like great people, and every day is just a real laugh, you know. Yeah. And there's structure and routine in my days as well when I'm on the road, which I don't have when I'm at home. So it's great, you know. In terms of whether we need to do it or not, I think we need to do it in the UK because it's big there. You know, we can do arenas in the UK, and it's like that's our territory. It's our home, and we love playing to British audiences. You know, but it's like, you know, there's places in Europe where it's like that. Italy's great as well. You know, but there are some places where I think we're going there just to sort of maintain a presence. Okay. And I don't know whether it's for me personally, and I'm not speaking for the band. I'm certainly not speaking for management. But for me, it's like, I don't mind if we turn into a heritage band and only focus on the territories where it really works. Mm. But you are kind of condemning yourself to that title of heritage act if you do that. So, for example, we'll go to America and we'll do a lot of touring there, but we don't really have a label partner in America. Mm-hmm. So our albums, they people will hear them and they'll stream them and stuff in the States, but they're not actually kind of marketed in the same way as they are here, kind of thing. So I kind of feel like, why are we bothering? And I'd rather do other stuff, really. But but I get it. I mean, I think it's we're still in a building phase, really, because I had 5 years off when I decided to take all of the drugs and spoil everybody's career. So we're still rebuilding from that. You don't really get any second chances. You have to grind and grind and grind and really work hard after you do a thing like that. So you know, it's like Eminem said: you only get one shot, really. Yeah. So you have to keep going. So to answer your question, both, really. It's really, really joyous and fun, and it's awesome for the momentum of the in the territories where we're building fast and making great strides and doing big stuff. And it's challenging in a different way in other territories, because you sort of play new material and a lot of the people don't really care about that stuff, you know. Whereas in the UK, it goes well, you know.
Is Don't Let the Bells End in the set, or is that, you know, a track which is performed after November?
Well, I think we're an October onwards band. Sometimes people ask for it at festivals, and it's fun to play.
Yeah.
You know, it's in a UK festival, you'll get people asking for it.
Yeah.
And most of the time, we'll just pander to that because
yeah.
We know how to play it. Why not? It's And I love that song because it's like when people go, oh, they're a one-hit wonder, and I say, what, you mean the Christmas song?
Yeah. Well, I was going to say to you, you know, should every band write a Christmas song to act as their musical pension, really, you know?
I don't know if it makes as much as you'd imagine, really. You know, I'm on a 911, I'm not in a McLaren, you know.
Okay.
What I mean?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, fair enough. But I like the fact that you said before, you know, you genuinely look forward to the touring, because I wasn't sure, you know, as I say, having done it for this many years, you know, and we're all gentlemen of a certain age now, sadly, I didn't know whether it was going to be one of those things where you kind of think, oh, do you know what, we've got to do the tour because we've got to promote the album, whatever. But the fact that you get excited and probably sort of counting down the days thinking, oh, it's only 2 weeks till we go on tour, is actually really nice and really refreshing, I think.
Well, I mean, the thing about being our age is that things come around way quicker than you can. Yeah. You know, the time dilates in a different way, doesn't it? It's so you see something in the diary, you might as well just get ready to do it, because it's coming really quickly.
Well, do you know what? Here's one for you. And actually, because of your age, Justin, you're a year younger than I am, I think. So because of your age, this works perfectly. And somebody told me this a couple of years ago, and it really freaked me out. But when you think about the millennium and the year 2000, which we can all, you know, vividly remember, right? Yeah. We are as far away from the millennium as 1975 was the other way, which of course was the year that you were born, which I find that to be a mind-blowing fact, because, you know, the noughties, for want of a better word, and the tens and whatnot just seem to have gone in a heartbeat. How on earth can we be that far from the millennium as 75 was?
I've never thought about that before.
Scary though, isn't it?
It's deep, isn't it?
Especially given the fact that, you know, given the fact that what year we are now and what year you were born.
Well, do you know what I think? I think culturally, I think in the 80s, there was, you know, rampant consumerism. Mm. In the 90s, you had grunge and Britpop. And
the decades were more defined, don't you think?
Yeah, they were. I think you can definitely, like, especially in terms of fashion, actually.
Yeah.
And then, like, noughties, it's really hard to pin down. Tens, you might as well forget about it. There's nothing of cultural note that happened in that time.
Yeah.
And this decade remains to be seen, really. So it's kind of like, I think it's basically because the 70s, 80s and 90s had so much contrast in them that it felt like longer. Now it's just bullshit. The whole thing is just a swathes of silty nothingness. And it's like, well, what are we doing? Maybe that's my age, but things were better, or at least more interesting. You know?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, me too. So anyway, look, let's talk cars. We know you love cars. Tell me about, you've just passed your arts license, haven't you? Racing license. Firstly, congratulations. But where did you do it? What made you think about doing it? Discuss.
Thank you. Well, I mean, you get to this age and you're as busy as I am, because I do several things. I mean, I produce other artists. I write for other people. I tour with the Darkness. I write with the Darkness. Mm-hmm. I do online stuff as well. I've got like the YouTube channel and all these things that are keeping me busy. I've kind of transitioned into a period of my life where the thing that I enjoy the most is like writing for other people.
Really?
Or producing. I really love it. Yeah. Part of it's laziness, because I don't have to go and do any
do
of
it.
Sort of promotional stuff with it. But at the same time, it's just really fun to see people flourish and go off and like, oh yeah, I helped with that. It's a good feeling, you know. Just behind the scenesy stuff is really enjoyable. But the reality is I'm too super busy. So when I turned 50, I thought, I want to do something for me. Mm. And years ago, I used to be like friends of the Classic Car Club. We used to do rallies. We used to sponsor a NASCAR at Rockingham Raceway.
Yeah.
And we had a lot of sort of affiliations with things that were petrolly based. Mm-hmm. I remember the first time I did the Top Gear run, you know, the stars in reasonably priced cars. I remember the Stig saying to me, you've got a bit of talent here. And I'd never really tried to drive in that way before. So I thought, well, let's explore that, you know. Mm-hmm. So I got a friend called Donna who works at Silverstone, and we played there last year for the MotoGP, the motorbike event.
That's where I bumped into you coming out the wing. Do you remember?
Oh, okay. Yeah, of course.
Do you remember?
Yeah. So yeah, that was kind of like, it's because me and her got on really well, and I was like, I want to do more of this stuff. What can we do? And she said, well, we can get your arts license, we can get you on Ducatis, we can do all this, you know. And I thought we'd start with the four wheels.
Yeah,
you know, I'm slightly less likely to kill myself in that, and I've got a bit of experience with sports cars, so let's try that, you know. I've got some racing trophies actually from when I was younger, you know, but I hadn't done it for years. And so I was kind of like, I rocked up in some, I think I was wearing like some, the shoes that I was planning to wear. In fact, they were the shoes that I wore on stage for the 40s inspired look for the King's thing.
Right. Yeah.
They had soles that were about that thick. They were completely inappropriate for driving. And they said to me, maybe you should go to the shop and get some racing shoes. I don't think they're going to do it. Mm. I was like, no, I always drive in these. It'll be right, you know. And it wasn't really all right. I was heavy footed. It was hard, you know. And so we went. And I think normally when you do the ARDS thing at Silverstone, they do either on half of the Formula One course or they do it on the national course.
Yeah.
I think it's called.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
But I did it on the main, I did it on the full.
Oh, on the GP circuit, wow.
I did, yeah, because it was some sort of bank holiday track day, right. So that there's, you know, they couldn't section it off, and I had to join in with all the McLarens and Ferraris and Porsches that were there. And they kept saying to me, oh, you know, it's okay if you don't pass this today. You can do the theory test and, you know, get that out of the way, and you can come back and finish it, you know. Mm. But I think all I needed to do really was to be not too slow to cause an issue for people shunting me, also just be safe enough and memorize the corners. And there's 18 of those.
And it's not an easy place to learn because it's flat, yeah, and featureless and wide.
Yeah, exactly. So if you're looking for landmarks to sort of help you with braking and stuff, it's not, you haven't got any of that. You've got to just be in the moment and feel it out, I think. But I did memorize it. I got my head around it in the end. And I went off and did some, you know, sideways driving and spinning around and all that kind of stuff on a different part of Silverstone. And then came back to it at the end. And I'm pretty sure I more or less scraped it. I'll have to go back and do some more before I do anything that's race, because I will be dangerous if I try and race now, I think. But you know, it's I liked it because one of them said I was wild, but I could do it.
do you remember your instructor's name?
Yeah, it was Deeksy.
Oh, Steve Deeks. Oh, right. I know Deeksy, yeah. Wild. Yeah. Wild, but what?
He said I could do it when I put my mind to it, but I was wild. He also said that he hadn't seen anybody work as hard over the course of an intensive day.
Brilliant.
I think he was quite proud of me for doing that, which is great. And I will go, it'll be him that I go around with again next time. We have a gentleman's agreement that I'll do that before I do any racing because I need a bit more.
Yeah.
I need the right shoes.
And so that is the intention then, obviously, to sort of use that to obviously, you know, take part in some races over the coming years?
Yeah, I can't see why not. I mean, I don't know. I feel like when I'm doing it, I don't feel nervous or anything like that. I don't feel like my heart rate's really slow when I'm doing it, and I don't fear being shunted. I don't mind being really close to other cars. I can get myself out of trouble if I need to, and I feel like I'm all right. Really, I'm not suggesting I'm going to win anything, but I do want to do it because I think it'd be fun.
Well, do you know what? That's one of the most important things that you can picture your mindset when you're in the car, and you know, I've obviously done a bit of racing in my time. You don't feel nervous. No. But you are aware, and I think it's because you're just so tuned and dialed in.
Maybe you're heightened. You have a heightened awareness, but I don't think it manifests as any sort of anxiety in me anyway.
No. Like,
you know, I'm pretty chilled.
Before we dig into the car history, Justin, I've just got a quick bit of mid-show housekeeping to do. If you haven't already, please press subscribe on YouTube so that you never miss an episode, or press the follow button on Apple or Spotify or wherever you get your podcast from. So you mentioned before about having done some racing in your early days. Where does the car story begin? What was the first car? What was the day of your test like? You know, talk us through the early days. And this is in Lowestoft, presumably, where you grew up.
Yeah, Lowestoft. Yeah, I think my first car was probably... I learned to drive in a Suzuki Rhino, SJ410, a classic. But I think that's a good thing to learn in, because if you turn around the corner too quickly, it's probably going to roll over.
Absolutely.
Yeah. You know, I did end up in someone's garden on the first day I tried to do it, and he was cutting the grass at the time, had to dive out the way. My father loves telling that story, so I've beaten him to it. And then I had like a day's intensive and passed. First time, it's all quite straightforward. I think it's easier to get your driving license when you live in a town like Lowestoft than it would be if I lived in London, I think.
Yeah.
I feel sorry for people that have to try and pass in cities. It's not the same challenge at all.
No, no.
But obviously the first thing you do when you get your license is you drive to London.
Yeah.
You try and figure it out, you know. And I literally said my goodbyes to my family because I didn't think I was going to survive that. And it was fine. I think after that I had a Fiat 900. It was a 900cc van for moving amps around in, you know, because I wanted to, because I was playing guitar in bands and stuff. It was handy to have that. I think I had a Fiat 126. I was just fond of Fiat, so I liked Italian cars. You know, it was all good. I wanted to have my parents were driving a Nissan Silvia, which was kind of like the nearest thing to a sports car that we ever had, you know. I think the only reason why they were able to afford that was because the interior had been chewed up by a dog. So like, it had like a, because do you remember, I don't know if you remember this stuff, like they used to sort of clad the walls, the doors of a car before they had all like side airbags and stuff. It was like, it was carpet, but it was also like foam underneath.
Right.
Probably, hopefully non-flammable foam. And so everything was had this sort of dense sort of touch to it. And this one had all tooth marks and claw marks in it. Like, so somebody had been driving around, presumably at high speeds in a Nissan Silvia, freaking out a big dog of some sort. So that was the car I really wanted. I didn't get that in the end. There's a few others along the way, Kangoos and stuff that's a bit practical. And then I turned into a rock star, and then the first rock star car I bought, I had this sort of partnership with Jaguar, and I specced up one of the XKRs.
Right. Oh, nice.
My liking.
Yes.
It was British Racing Green with cream seats and just every extra you can have on it.
Brilliant. Down the order form. Tick, 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 tick.
Yeah, I ticked everything. That's really true. And it had a phone in it and all sorts. It was great. And but I was really gutted because after a year, they took that back and gave me another one.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, but I really want to keep. Can I buy that? And they're like, no. They wanted me in a new one. So, you know, that was kind of like the deal. So, I don't know why, but I wasn't able to keep that. And then I had another one, which I didn't like as much because it was convertible. And it's kind of like, not really a convertible guy. Mm. I don't know why.
And anything exotic along the way?
Exotic? How do you mean by exotic?
Well, I don't know. A bit more exotic than a Jaguar. I know Porsches, Ferraris, anything like that.
I did have a Ferrari 328 GTS, which is my favourite car I ever had, probably.
Yeah.
Mm.
I had it for, I don't know how long, but I got it really cheap for some reason from a Ferrari dealership. And obviously it's skyrocketed since then. I wish I'd kept it.
Yeah.
But I felt bad because I was on the road a lot and the car was just sitting outside my house in London. I was kind of like, it's not fair on the car, you know?
No.
So some of the time the Classic Car Club was sort of maintaining it for me while I was away. But for most of the time, it was just sitting in the rain. I was like, So I did the right thing for the car and I sold it. And I've sort of regretted that ever since. That's the one that I think I could still see myself driving.
The love that you lost, if you like.
Yeah, it was the love of my life in terms of cars. It was just amazing.
Mm. Do you know what? Particularly the 328, that's when we were kids. That car was the car, wasn't it?
That wasn't the Magnum one, was it?
No, Magnum was a 308.
Okay.
But it was the same. It was a GTS. But the thing is,
pretty
I think
car.
Those
really pretty.
Yeah,
car.
The 308s, I think, were probably more inclined to catch fire than the 328s. And also, it had ABS braking. So it drove like a modern car, but it looked really cool. I liked it.
Yeah, great motors.
I really loved it, actually. Oh, God, I can still remember because the thing is, if you get into a Ferrari when it's been sitting outside your house and then you touch the gear stick.
Yeah, with the gate.
It's cold to the touch because it's basically just like a ball bearing on a stick, isn't it?
Yeah.
And it's like, wow. You know you're driving. You know, it's like it's tactile and every experience of it is just like this, the noise and it's the smell and it's the temperature. It's like, it's the fact that like the plastic buttons on the center console break off if you touch them. You know what I mean? Like the whole thing is just like, it's an experience. Yeah. You know, it's like, it's real. For me, that was real driving.
Yeah.
You know? Anything that's on automatic or even, I don't know, it doesn't feel as sort of, you're not as connected, I don't think. Mm.
But those moments are imprinted in your mind, like you mentioned about the gear lever, the ball on the top and the smell you get. You can feel it now, can't you?
Yeah.
Incredible, right?
And also, like, just it was a beautiful thing to look at. I'd just look out the window at it and go, oh my God, that is so gorgeous. A really great piece of design. just like, I don't know, like an objet that happens to get you from A to B. And I was using it like a daily driver as well, because I'm an idiot.
So what's the current car then, Justin? Or indeed, is there a fleet of automotive exotica?
There's a little fleet. Okay. Yeah, there's a mini fleet here.
Talk us through it, if you may.
Okay. I'm driving I found this Porsche 911. Mm-hmm. But it's one of the first water-cooled ones. So it's from 2002. It's a 996. But what's amazing about it was that I think the person that owned it before bought it from new and then had some sort of back injury and wasn't able to drive it, but maintained it really well for years. So it was like a new... It had done 3,000 kilometres when I bought it in... Wow. When did I buy it? I've had it for about 5 years now. Mm-hmm. But it was, and I know those things have like there's some controversy about the engines on those ones that I think 8% of them suddenly break down because the bearing seal goes or something like that. But if you drive it like I drive it, like an old lady, then it's okay. You know, it's going to be fine. But the wonderful thing about it is it's black on the outside and it has this kind of mint green.
Oh, nice.
Interior. It's gorgeous. I mean, I've only seen one other like it, and that was just the other day in Zurich. I saw one. That was an air-cooled, an older one. So that colorway has been in the Porsche world once in the 80s, probably.
And has it got a black top to the dashboard, or has it got?
No, the whole thing's green. All of the interior is mint green. It's outrageous. Wow. It's so cool. So yeah, I don't know. I was just like, wow, look at those colours. Wow, look at that mileage. Okay,
yeah, let's
have a look at that. So it was like a 4-hour drive to Geneva, and I just drove it for a bit. And I was like, yeah, I've got to have this. It's pretty cool. Because before that, before I moved to Switzerland, I was very much into Lotuses or Lotai, as a Partridge might say. But it's kind of like,
well, boys, that harking back to your East Anglian childhood,
quite,
I suppose. I mean, it's the wrong county technically, but it's not far away, is it?
No, it's not far. My brother used to live very, very close to Hethel, where they make them. And one of my dear friends, Guy Monday, who used to be involved in the Formula One stuff, he's my car friend, and he sold me my most recent Lotus, and sent me to the Lotus Academy for some track days and stuff like that. So that's another car that I really like because it's mid-engine, so you've got the noise of it behind your head, and also similar sort of tactile nature. Mm. No power steering. It's really proper driving.
Yes. You know, and there is no sharper steering car in the world than Porsche.
It is literally the opposite of the Suzuki SJ4. So I mean, I like Lotuses and Porsches and Ferraris. Who doesn't?
And is there a motor in itch yet to scratch?
I feel like I want to go back to Ferrari world at some point. Mm. I see a lot of Lambos around here, but I'm not bothered about them. I used to be when I was a kid. I think I used to love the Countach.
Yes.
Mm. I used to think that was an amazing car. Mm. And I did look at some of those a couple of years ago, but I was kind of like, it's just too much of a boy's car, really, you know.
They do have a different image, I think, don't they? I mean, very much now, it seems to be, Lambos seem to be obviously very wealthy, but young men. Yeah. They're a kind of 30-year-old's car, I think.
Whereas in the olden days, the Miura used to be like Twiggy.
Absolutely.
Rod Stewart, you know, like it was cool people driving them, It's not like that anymore. Nobody cool drives a Lamborghini anymore. It's just, unfortunately, that's the way it is.
They're way too out there. They're too angular. They're too many bits and sharp edges. A car's got to have a bit of a flow to it, I think.
I think so, too. It has to have a bit of femininity and some feline quality. That's one of the things that drew me to the Jaguar, anyway. I thought those old lines on that particular XKR range were quite sexy, I thought. You know. Nowhere near the 328. I still think that's the most beautiful car. I mean, that and the Lamborghini... Okay, you could probably talk me into a Miura.
Yes.
You could probably talk me into one of those.
That's a different kettle of fish, though, isn't it?
I definitely
if you gave me like a million quid and said, you can have any car you want. You've got to spend all of this on a car. Yeah. I'd be like, all right.
So, right, this prompts a question. So, if you get a Swiss reposition order served tomorrow at your address and said, right, we're taking all the cars apart from one and you've got to live with this one car for the rest of the days, what's it going to be?
What, taken from my fleet or from my existing fleet or from an imaginary fleet?
From you know, your fleet you've had in the past. So it could be the 328. It could be whatever you've had in your car history.
Well, if I could keep one,
one.
In my car history, one car.
Yeah.
I would struggle. It'd be between the 911 and the 328. But I think it would be the 328.
Wow, good call.
328 GTS. Yeah, that's it. The best thing is it's in the most kind of, I want to say, cliched colorway. It was red, black top with cream interior. It was gorgeous. Yeah. I mean,
that's the classic combination, isn't it?
It is. But I would have a black one now.
Would you?
Yeah, I'd have all black everything. I think that's something that's changed about me. I think I used to be sort of flamboyant in my car color choices. I'm not anymore. I just want black cars. I just think they go faster.
You can't go wrong with a black car. I like black cars.
Yeah, I suppose it's that. You know.
Absolutely. Yeah. So, Justin, when you look back at the last 25 years in terms of all that you've done and all that you've achieved, and this is a big question, right, to get us towards the end, what are you most proud of?
Okay, if this was like Loose Women or something, I'd say I'm really proud of the person that my daughter's turning into. Mm-hmm. I think I feel like any contribution I've made to that, I the other day I saw her pick a t-shirt and pay for it with her own money without, you know, no fuss, just like she saw something she liked, she went for it. And that's what I love about being a father, is like you see opinions forming in your child that you've got nothing to do with, you know. It's like that's them establishing their own character and their own tastes and curating their own sort of cultural influence and doing something, and just buying something as simple as buying a t-shirt. It was a beautiful moment for me. I've had so many great experiences as a father. I think it's my favorite thing. I just love it. And I love it when she comes on tour. So she comes out and like she has a bunk and she decorates the bunk. She makes everybody laugh and she's really cool. She's only 11, but she's just like one of the gang, you know. It's really fun. And so I'd say if I'm proud of one thing, it's like my influence as a father. I'm really glad I made those decisions. I'm glad I'm in the same country as her. I'm glad I'm around, and I'm glad she's awesome, because, you know, if I was sticking around and she was a pain in the ass, it'd be like,
but you know what? But you look really happy, Justin, genuinely, and it's really nice to see. You know, because obviously, thanks. You know, no, but there's obviously, you know, we've all had our ups and downs in the last sort of couple of decades, but you look really happy and content, and I think it's just good.
Thank you. Well, it's nice to still be able to do the things that I love. You know, like I'm back playing veterans football as well. I had a shoulder injury for a couple of years, which was making everything a bit difficult. But I found an amazing physiotherapist and I'm sort of like feeling fit again as well. Yeah. So it's kind of like, wow. You know, everything's sort of falling into place nicely.
That is a great feeling fit in your 50s. That's a good feeling, eh?
Yeah. I mean, do you know what? 2 years ago, I played a gig in Budapest. And I went for a run along the Danube and everything. It was just an amazing day. I really enjoyed it. And I was into running and stuff like that. And then the next morning I woke up and my shoulder was agony. And it was like that for months. I had the injections, which sort of relieved the pain, but it would gradually creep back. Couldn't do much with it. And it was kind of like, this is bad. And then people who had similar experiences were telling me it's for the rest of your life. But I found this guy, Jason, in London, who's my physiotherapist. And he's sorted it out in about 3 months. And I'm so happy, because now I can do all the stuff that I was doing in my early 40s.
Yes.
And the 50s look like the 40s again. You know, it's cool. So obviously I'm happy, you know. Everything still works, you know what I mean? So it's
hey!
No, I meant round about this.
So look, here's a question we ask all our guests. It's probably going to be our final question here. So, you know, it's a mental image. It's a fantasy drive. It could be anywhere in the world. We always think that music and cars are a great mix together. So where are you in the world? Where are you going to? What are you driving? And what's on the CD or the streamer?
Okay. Before I answer this, can I do this in a roundabout way?
Of course.
Yes.
It's our favourite way.
I was thinking about Lamborghinis, right? And how masculine and how young and how rich and how kind of vulgar that particular sort of, you know, area of motoring has become. Do you remember Cannonball Run?
Yes.
Lamborghini girls. Like, there was a period of time in my career when I was wearing cat suits that were inspired by what those two were wearing.
Yeah,
is that right?
Yeah, but also in the same movie, Ferrari 308 with the two priests.
Yes.
I mean, tells you everything you need to know, doesn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
And then, so you can see how, I don't know, that's it, how Lamborghini's gone from that kind of femininity to what it is now. Mm. Whereas Ferrari, it's always been class.
Yes.
Always. Mm. Sorry, yeah. So what was the question?
So fancy drive. Where in the world are you? Where are you going to? What are you driving and what's on the player?
Do you know what? Maybe this is a cliche. I don't know what people normally say, but I'd say Montenegro or somewhere like that. Some sort of mountain.
I tell you what, that's not what people normally say. You're sort of...
What do people normally say?
Pacific Coast Highway comes up a lot.
Yeah.
Boring.
Yeah, all that.
Why would you want to do that? If you take a car that you care about that close to that ocean, you're going to end up with rust everywhere.
Yeah.
Especially if it's an older car. Yeah. You know. Yeah. I've done those kinds of drives anyway. I did a drive which was I did Vegas to San Francisco, mm-hmm. which involved a bit of Death Valley stuff. Yeah, it was cool.
Yeah.
But I did it in a 1967 Reliant Regal. So a three-wheeled fiberglass car that only goes at 40 miles an hour.
It's not everyone's choice.
Eight lanes of interstate in some instances. My friend did it. He went right across America. It took him 6 weeks. He shipped a Reliant Regal out, did it in 6 weeks, and it was to raise money and awareness of prostate cancer. Uh-huh. It was a long time ago. Mm-hmm. Before I was a rock star, I came and joined in for the last part of it, which was just an amazing drive. You know, but I wouldn't do that again. I don't think I'd do. I wouldn't do American coastal driving. I would do something European. I think Montenegro is the way. I think mm-hmm. that's the winding kind of cliff paths and that kind of stuff would be interesting. Or South Africa would be fun.
Yeah,
I think. But let's say Montenegro.
Say Montenegro.
In what though?
Mm.
I mean, I did a rally in America in a Ford GT. That was fun. That was fun and loud. I would want something mid-engined, something exotic, something I haven't driven before. I don't know. What do you suggest?
Maybe a Miura.
Mm.
Yeah, Montenegro in a Miura.
Montenegro in a Miura.
That's good, actually. And what colour would the Miura be? Yellow?
What about lime green?
Oof. Do you know, that reminds... What's that movie, the Clint Eastwood... Is it a Clint Eastwood movie where he criticises... No, it's a movie where... One of the baddies drives like a Countach and it's in a bright lime green.
Yeah.
And he criticizes his taste and is promptly tortured for it. I don't know. I think obviously these are complementary opposites and therefore nothing like one another, but yellow or purple Miura.
Purple, that's a great...
Purple Miura. I think, isn't that what Twiggy drove? Did she have a purple one?
I don't know.
I feel like a lilac Miura.
I have a feeling that the Twiggy one was the lime green one.
Okay.
I'm not sure. Anyway, but it's motoring in Montenegro in a Miura.
Yeah, and whatever, like, so if it is like a lilac Miura, I would want to wear a suit that matches it and have the same tint of sunglasses when I get out. Just be a complete...
But it's all one package. You are one with the car. So
sartorially, I can't see the... I just... It's so important to have that, like, to acknowledge that you are the car's accessory and not the other way around. You know, if it's about the Miura, then dress like you're driving the Miura. You know, dress for the Miura.
Okay.
I do that with a Porsche, actually, because, like, if I'm going somewhere in that, I try and make sure it involves green and black. And because I'm an idiot. But I do have an L Style Award. So, you know.
So what's on the soundtrack then? What are we listening to? What is, you know, with those Montenegrin mountains...
Wow. I know exactly what's on this. There's an album by Terry Reid. What's it called? Which one is it? Is it Faith to Arise?
I know what you mean, yes.
I think it's called Faith to Arise. I just checked the... it's a really good summary. I mean, we're talking about going in the summer, aren't we?
Yes. So,
let me check. I want to check what album that's on. Do.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Something chill.
That definitely works in the Miura in Montenegro.
Yeah, I think the album's called Seed of Memory. And the whole record is amazing. It was produced by Graham Nash.
Mm-hmm.
So it has like incredible sort of backing vocals. His voice sounds like, you know, without Terry Reid, we wouldn't have Paolo Nutini.
Yes.
We wouldn't have, you know what I mean? Like his voice is so great, and it's kind of like Robert Plant, mm-hmm. but more country-esque, and incredible songs, great harmonies, and just on a sunny day in Montenegro in a Miura, that's all you want to hear, I think.
Sounds perfect to me.
I've marked it for download now. Okay, I've not listened to that album, so I've got about 4 hours in the car to do now.
I promise you this, it's an outstanding record. It's really great. There's so many good songs on it. It's beautiful to listen to. You'll love it.
I think it's a perfect image. And on that note, Mr. Plato, I think you need to take us out.
Well, that's it for this week's Fueling Around, powered by Adrian Flux. As the UK's largest specialist insurance broker, Adrian Flux will tailor a quote to your exact needs and help you save money on your car, your bike, or even your home insurance. Dave, as always, thanks to you. But a special thanks to our amazing guest this week, the one and only Mr. Justin Hawkins. Thanks.
Oh, thank you, guys. I really enjoyed it. It's nice to talk about something that isn't, you know, drugs. For a change.
Thank you, Justin. It's been a pleasure. Enjoy the rest of the tour. Best of luck with the album. Don't forget to press subscribe on YouTube so that you never miss an episode, or you can press the follow button on Apple or Spotify or wherever you get your podcast from.
Thanks, everyone, for listening, and, well, we'll see you next time. Ta-da.
Justin, before we go, can we ask one little favour? We've never done this before, but I think that given that it's you and you're there in your studio and you've got your guitar, would you play us a little something just to play us out?
Great idea. Great idea, okay. Vitti.
Gotta be done.
Good idea. Oh, I'm so pleased that you asked me to play a song.
I'm so not prepared.
I didn't even tune the guitar. Should I tune it?
No.
Tuning's for wimps. And also, it's not my job to do that.
Absolutely. You've got people to do that.
I guess now it's time for me to give up. And take that, fans and hearts.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Got a picture of you beside me. Got your lips. Oh, I'll tell you what I've been listening to today. Oh, this is a great song. See if you recognize the artist. Mm-hmm. Secret heart, what are you made of? What are you so afraid of? Could it be 3 simple words? Or the fear of being overheard? What's wrong? Let her in on your secret heart.
Little round of applause, I think.
Beautiful.